Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here on this Martin Luther King Day. We'll be broadcasting for an hour today. We'll be breaking at noon for special programming with the Dr. Martin Luther King tribute and ceremony. But you know what? We've got Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum back with us once again. They are physical therapists. Lori's a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, great to have you back.
It's good to be back here.
Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. And Jill, always great to see you.
It's great to be here. I had to skate over here a little bit. Well,
I skated in all the way from Mount Horeb. Yeah. It was a big skate.
Yeah. It was a very big,
big skate.
And tough walking. And there are bound to be some injuries today. I want to start with a little bit on skiing. And Jerry and Shell Lake's got a question for us as well. But let's talk about skiing for just a minute or two. There are, what, over 100,000 people every year that are who are treated for snow-related injuries?
Yeah, downhill skiing and snowboarding injuries, whether it's a overuse injury or a macro trauma of some sort, certainly it's a very common injury. And I think some of the challenges we face here in Wisconsin for downhill skiing example or cross-country skiing are we have weather like this outside, where it makes it very difficult to train.
Mm-hmm. But kind of icy.
Exactly. And then you go up north to do a big ski weekend, or you go to a hill and do a big ski weekend, and it's very hard to kind of get your muscles in shape or condition for it when we don't have the right conditions here in southern Wisconsin to train.
Exactly. And typically, you pay a fair amount of money for those lift tickets. And so, by gum, you want to get your money's worth, whether it's here or in Colorado or Utah or someplace else. And, you know, you do what you can to get in shape, as Jill said. But when you get there and, you know, there's the lure of the mountain and one more run.
Right. That's what people always say when they get injured. It was the last run of the day.
Right.
And whether they were tired and fatigued, or their muscles were fatigued, or they had some mental concentration difficulties where they were just mentally tired and weren't focusing appropriately, it's usually that last run of the day, ironically, that leads to injury.
Right, exactly.
Do you anything to do? How do you warm up for it?
Well, I think one of the important things is if you are, you really have to train specific to your sport. So if you're going into downhill skiing, if you're going away for a weekend or up north for a weekend and you really want to focus on downhill skiing, training should be such that your quadriceps and gluteal muscles have really good endurance training. So getting in a squat position and kind of oscillating up and down as if you're going down a mountain for a few minutes, the bout you should do should be relatively long to mimic the ski run would be very appropriate. Getting in a weight rack and doing heavy lifting and do a few repetitions isn't going to be nearly as specific as doing kind of more an endurance type for your quadricep and gluteal muscles.
Right. But combining that strength training with the endurance training, I think, also makes sense because you get in certain situations where at times you really need to muster some strength to make a turn or to get out of a dangerous situation. So you really also need that reserve. So some combination of those two things makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Equipment issues? Are there things that you need to watch out for or problems?
Well, I think it's important that you get your ski equipment, you know, just like you get your car winterized. If you own your own ski equipment, you should definitely get it winterized. You know, your boots and bindings are relative to your weight. And they're adjusted relative to your weight. So like it or not, you may have put on a few pounds and you need to adapt your equipment to make sure that it accommodates you. So making sure your equipment is safe and up to speed, that especially that you have an appropriate fitting helmet for downhill skiing and snowboarding is essential. A ill-fitting helmet is basically almost as bad as not wearing
or
one
worse.
At all.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And making sure that your bindings are set appropriate for your level of expertise so that you can get out of them if you need to, or that you don't pop out of them unnecessarily.
Right.
Yeah, and a lot of people just rent.
Correct.
Right.
And so you need to be a little careful.
You do. You need to make sure that even when you rent skis that they're fitted appropriately to you, that you take the time, make sure that you know your height and weight when you go up there, and you're very honest about your ski level. So they set the bindings appropriate
your
to
weight.
Your ski level. And your weight. And your weight. Yes. And then the most important thing is not skiing out of your scope. And I think this becomes really hard when you go in a group and perhaps people are blue or black diamond skiers and you're still a green and you want to be with your friends or go with them, and skiing beyond your level is probably where most people get in danger.
Is there anything earlier than green? That's where
the
I am.
Bunny hill. That's where I am. You'll find me on the bunny hill. Exactly.
Yes. And part of that is also that there are other people skiing those hills right. that shouldn't be on them. And so even if you think you can probably manage it, your ability to ski out of trouble or stay out of the way of someone else who has chosen to ski beyond their skill level is really important, because you could be the unfortunate victim of someone else's bad decision.
Right.
Who was the actor that died while skiing?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, boy.
Come
we
on,
just had
Larry.
This
yeah, I know. Come on. And you're going to make
singer,
us try to recall
singer.
That on air?
A singer. Oh, well, it'll come to
someone
it.
Will call in and
somebody
tell us.
Somebody will call in yes. and yeah. say who. It wasn't. Oh, okay. Let's just go to Jerry.
There you go, Larry. Good
Maybe call. Jerry knows.
Maybe Jerry knows. Yeah.
Jerry at Shell Lake High. Thanks for calling.
No, I can't recall. I'd like to thank your guests, first of all, for the service they provide on the radio.
Well, thank you.
It's
very, very valuable to people all over the state and country. Everybody knows about a back, a shoulder, and a hip problem. So even if they're not calling, they still learn a lot.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Jerry.
So as far as I'm concerned, I believe I have arthritis in the hip, and I'm fighting it because I don't want a new hip. I'm fighting it with PT, half squats, stationary bicycle. I made some progress, and I also have the osteopath said a problem with SI joint. Mm. But why I'm calling is a real disappointment is below the knee I have a problem. The muscular part of the knee or the leg in front, lower leg, has a pinched nerve feeling. And occasionally when I'm walking, the knee just disappears and I buckle. And then it goes away. Is that related to hip or just something separate, do you think?
Well, let's back up a little bit.
Yeah.
So we know you have the hip problem and a little bit of an SI joint problem. When did the lower leg thing, and is this, I was a little confused with you said below your knee and your knee. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, it starts at the knee. The knee isn't real bad itself. There's a little soft pocket that I like to massage.
Okay.
But then below the knee, the muscular part, all the way down to the ankle, just like a pinched nerve feeling. And I've had some experience with that, too.
So is that burning? Is that tingling? Is it electric shocks? What is the nerve feeling
sort of
to
a,
you?
Sort of a burning, stinging, and it comes and goes. But sometimes the knee just disappears for a second.
And
it likes to be massaged. I've tried heat and ice, but I don't know how much to do and if it's going to work, you know.
Is there any pattern to the feeling in your calf? A certain time of day, certain movements, certain activities?
Or is your back in a certain position every time you get that feeling?
No, just walking. But I'm not sure about the terminology of calf. It's not about the muscular rear part. It's the front flesh.
The front. Okay.
Okay.
That's where the pinched nerve would feel, too, also, over historically, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, there are a couple things that come to mind. Is it coming from your hip?
Probably
unlikely.
Not. Probably not.
Unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
It can be coming from higher up
right.
in your low back. You know, if you have some arthritis in your hip, there's a chance you have some in your low back also. So it could be coming from your low back.
Especially if you have some SI joint pathology.
Right.
You said you had
right.
some SI joint pain. Is it arthritic or is it what's going on with your SI joint?
That I don't know. The osteopath was kind of brief and he just said, looks like SI.
Okay.
He said, I won't give you painkiller because you're already doing it. And he recommended PT.
Okay. So have someone in the PT look at your back and see if this is possibly coming from your back. You can also get some entrapments around your knee
right.
or below your knee. So you are correct, probably, that this is a nerve-related thing. And the question is, where along the course of that nerve that starts at your lumbar spine, passes down through your hip and pelvis, down through your thigh, around your knee, to your ankle and foot, where along that line is it getting pinched? And you really need a good exam to try to figure that piece out.
Right. It's the question is whether it's a nerve root coming from your back or more some sort of entrapment of a peripheral nerve, which is what Lori's talking about, more around that area. So when you massage that area around your knee, do you feel like you have less of that kind of numbness and tingling or that pain in the front of your calf?
I can make it feel real good just by being off it and rubbing it.
Okay.
And then
okay.
I'll be disappointed. My hip will feel good, and then darn, my knee is
still
hurting.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I would say next time you see your PT, tell them about these symptoms in your calf and have your PT do an exam up and down.
And try and pay attention if you notice those things that Lori talked about, whether it's my body's in a certain position or it's a certain time of day or
any pattern.
My knee's in a position. Yeah, see if you can figure out a pattern to it. That would help your therapist.
Yeah.
And the rest
of it seems like in the late afternoon when I finally get done with work, I go to the grocery store, I say, oh, this hurts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty classic.
About 4 o'clock.
Of arthritis.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Pretty classic.
Yeah.
Well, good luck, Jerry.
I appreciate it again.
Thanks a lot for calling. And, here's Mike, and then we'll go to Ann. Mike in Madison, hi.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me on today.
Sure.
So I just wanted to let everybody know, I'm a longtime skier, downhill skier. I used to ski a lot in my late teens. I'm in my late 20s now, and I had just had been almost a decade. Conditions like almost today, very icy outside, and I thought I could do the jumps like I used to be able to do, and let me tell you, if you haven't been out in a long time, I did a long jump and ended up going way too far past the downhill and ended up hitting just a flat level ground and passed out for about 10 minutes.
Oh,
wow.
Boy.
And, luckily, I'm in my 20s, so I bounced back quick enough and didn't have to go to any hospital or physical therapy. But, you know, if you haven't been out for a long time, be careful.
Yep. That's a great tip.
Yeah, that is a very, very good piece of advice.
Yep.
Right.
And there are probably a lot of people like Mike who, they haven't been for a few years, but I'm just going to go out and do the same thing I always did.
Start slower, start on a slower hill, less involved. And then Mike also shared with us who the...
Yeah, Sonny Bono. Yeah. It was the singer who died as downhill skiing. Mm-hmm. So there we go. There we go.
Icy conditions, so be very careful.
All right, thanks, Mike. Let's turn to Ann next in Appleton. Ann, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hi there. I have a kind of a dual-fold question. First of all, let me also add to that list Natasha Richardson, who is the wife of Liam. What's his last
name? Neeson.
Anyway, she also died of a skiing accident due to brain injuries.
Yes.
Oh. There you go.
Yes.
Thank
Liam
you.
Neeson.
Liam Neeson.
It was his wife.
Yep.
Okay, now here's my question. Mm-hmm. I now became a member of a program called Silver Sneakers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Part of the wonderful Medicare supplements.
Yep.
Which allows you to join a number of gyms. Sadly, though, most of the gyms don't have anything in place as far as the Silver Sneakers program. I've always been a very physically fit person, but with age, I have, of course, accumulated a number of injuries from motorcycle wrecks and all kinds of things. My question is, first of all, the one gym that I'm looking at offers a thing called total body enhancement. I don't know if you've heard of it, with a red light therapy, and then it also gives you a vibration, I think, to kind of maybe do some bone rebuilding.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with the vibration training.
Okay. And then it also has a hydro massage water bed type
of
thing.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Where you lay in between the bladders and you do get a hydro.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
It is not exercise, though. Do not confuse it with exercise.
Right. It is supposed to help for those painful injuries.
Sure. Yeah.
But my question is, what do you know about those two things? And also, so what does a person like me do? I don't want to accumulate any more pain or injuries. I deal with the rotator cuff overuse syndrome, and I want to get back to really get in really, really good shape, good core. What program should I start? I don't know where to go here.
Those are great questions. So let's talk about the total body enhancement and the hydro massage thing first, and then we can talk about your next question. So the total body enhancement that you're talking about is a vibration type of plate that you stand on, and it kind of vibrates and jiggles a little bit, and it's supposed to help increase bone mineral density. And we know we all want to increase our bone mineral density, especially women postmenopausal. I don't know enough about it to know if there's studies out there looking at it. But as Lori would say, I definitely wouldn't replace this with exercise. I'd still do my weight-bearing exercises, my weight-bearing activity, whether it's walking or step aerobics or something like that. And I'd still do a resistance training class or some sort of activities. And if you do this on top of it for a few minutes, that's great, but it would no way substitute for those other core things that you talked about.
Exactly. And the same is true of the hydro massage. It's kind of like saying, well, I'm going to go get a massage to get in shape. So, you know, it's going to make you feel good. It's going to be relaxing, you know, getting in the hot tub when you're done.
Right. I put it in that same category.
Yes, you have to earn it.
That's what I said.
We used to tell our athletes, nobody gets taped without exercise. You have to earn your tape job.
You stretch, do your balance exercises.
You do your strengthening, et cetera. So where to start? Well, hopefully your gym has experience working with seniors who have a variety of injuries in their past. We frequently see people who have gone to a gym and have overdone it because they didn't get the right guidance, and then they end up coming to therapy for us to help dig them out of the hole and get them back on track again. So finding someone who is knowledgeable in working with seniors. And then also a piece of that is being patient enough to start at the beginning. So your goal is to get in really good shape. Awesome. There is no fast track to getting in really good shape for anybody of any age, and particularly as we get older, as I can attest. Just giving you that opening, Jill.
Thank you.
So, you know, the total body enhancement, that would be an adjunct. It is not a replacement for any kind of exercise. Will it add anything above and beyond your resistance training program? I'd say it's probably doubtful. It would be a marginal addition, if anything. I wouldn't go somewhere based upon them offering me that part of my program.
And those two things, as I understand, are something you do after you do your work.
Yes, that would make the most sense.
Yep.
Now, with regards to your program, you know, you said you've had some injuries and you're dealing with a rotator cuff and things like that. The other option you could do is go see your physical therapist and have them make a list of do's and don'ts for you. Mm-hmm. So these are exercises that would be good for me to do. These are things based on my history, based on my musculoskeletal condition, that I should avoid. And you could take that list to the gym. And if they don't have a personal trainer that has a lot of experience dealing with musculoskeletal injuries in the Silver Sneakers population, you could present your list and that would help guide them. Mm-hmm. So that would be another option, is to go and be proactive, see a PT that you've been seeing for a while and say, this is what I want to do. What should I do? What should I avoid? Can you help me make recommendations so when I go to the gym, I start out on a golden foot?
Yes, very good. Good idea. Yeah. And some of the gyms have physical therapists who are employed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know in Madison they do.
They do. Absolutely.
Yeah. So. And our sort of general rule of thumb is you need to be able to do the same workout at the same level for 3 sessions in a row before you go up. So there's no, you know, going up every other day when you come into the gym by adding weight or something like that.
Right.
Okay. There we go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today as we talk physical therapy with them. Nyasia Ellison, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Right now, taking a look at your physical therapy issues with our guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum from the University of Wisconsin. Lori works out of the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. And open lines, we can get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Carol wondered if push-ups are considered resistance training.
That's a great question. So, yes, I would consider them strength training or endurance training for your upper body. And when done appropriately, you really it helps with your core as well, because you need to really stabilize in your low back. So I would definitely consider them resistance training.
Yep. And they're a great kind of total body core exercise, unless you're doing it. Do you remember our caller last month who was doing 200 push-ups?
Yeah.
He created a little parkour for himself and stopped and did 20 push-ups every light pole or something.
Right,
right. Then it's going to be injurious.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a great exercise.
It is a great exercise.
Yeah, and you can also combine that with just some planking, too.
Correct.
Yep. Planking? What's that?
Plank. That's where you hold yourself up in that push-up position and just hold.
So you can either be on your hands, or some people drop down to their elbows. And it's a really good exercise for core stability. It's you have to hold it in just the right position, though, to really do it appropriately. A lot of people like to what we call make teepees or tent up and hike up in their butt or do a pike, and that's not
not the way to do it.
Same
true. Straight across.
Yeah. Correct. And the same is true with push-ups, and that's why they call it a plank, Larry, and not a hinge.
There we go. Well, Brad in Madison has something for us. Hi, Brad.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So excited to talk to you. So I have a son. He's 12. He's a cross-country skier, and he was just in a boot, a walking boot, on his right foot with crutches for 2 weeks. They feared that he had a Lisfranc problem. He had a second metatarsal, and we were classical skiing. He also plays indoor soccer. And so, you know, the fear was that he had either a stress fracture or had torn ligament, right?
Yes.
And we just had it confirmed that through an MRI that there's no bone fragments or anything. They used the term on the x-ray that there was like a fragment, and so it really wasn't anything that was problematic with the structure of the bone, nor was it a problem with the ligament.
Good.
And so they told me that it was just a stress response. Something happened. It was seriously inflamed. Okay. Seems like he's going to be okay. No surgery. He's out of the boot. He's moving around just fine. My question for you guys is, he's now telling me that his knee joint and his ankle joints are really sore and tight, and he's having a hard time kind of moving again.
He's actually
walking and doing pretty well, but we put him on skis, and his knee, he said, hurt and stuff like that. So what should I do physical therapy to get him moving again?
Well, I think you should see someone. That's not uncommon for somebody to be immobilized at one joint and then have the joints above or below the place of immobilization have some soreness. So that's pretty typical. You know, your Lisfranc joint, which is your tarso metatarsal joint in your foot, kind of where your tarsals come together with your
metatarsals,
hence the
name. For lack of a better term.
Hence the name. is really an important joint when you talk about load transmission from the midfoot to the forefoot. And so it's a very important joint to have good stability, and you don't want to mess around with it. I'm glad to hear he doesn't have any ligamentous injuries, but some really good foot and intrinsic strengthening, as well as calf strengthening and whole lower extremity strengthening, would be good. And my sister's shaking her head and wanting to talk.
It's so hard for me. Yeah,
sit on her hands.
I know. And but anyway, one of the things that I see so often with the boots is nobody levels them out.
Yeah.
So they're in this boot and they're walking on two different level surfaces. So it tends to mess with things up the kinetic chain, hip, knee, low back, pelvis. It can manifest anywhere depending upon your previous history. So walking around for 2 weeks in that could have easily annoyed any of those joints in his leg. So I do agree with Jill that he should go in and see somebody, sometimes just one or two visits. Partly because also his foot's been immobilized. The deleterious effects of immobilization are really profound. And so people think about it only relative to the injury, while I'm resting my injury. And they forget about everything else that's used to being worked, moved, trained, resisted, etc., are completely immobilized. And there are changes that you can see within 48 hours of immobilization. So he needs to train the rest of those structures back up, as well as the area where he was having symptoms. So I wouldn't myself put him back on skis, or certainly put him on the soccer field without some rehabilitation for that leg.
Correct.
Great, yeah. Great. It's surprising how he actually on crutches and in the boot, so he didn't do any weight bearing for 2 weeks. And it's so surprising how just a quick 2 weeks can leave that leg so feeling off, you know, and not ready to get back and moving.
And he's only 12.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Imagine me.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's pretty amazing that someone that young can have those changes so rapidly. So you can appreciate when we put an elderly person on non-weight bearing for 6 weeks, something like that, the deleterious effects that happen. Yeah. So the good news is he'll rebound relatively quickly, but he should have a structured program, especially it sounds like he's a pretty active person.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We have, there is something that happened to many people yesterday that, Jim, I'm sure this is a potential injury that happened maybe among thousands of people.
Jumping out of their
Jim
chair.
Jim emailed. He jumped up. I was standing
during
already,
the Packer game.
Twisted to the right somehow and fist pumped when Crosby made the winning field goal. Now my back is sore.
But it was worth it. I'm sure it's worth it.
Thanks for taking one for the team.
He twisted to the right somehow, fist pumped, and now his back is sore, centered right above his hips and just below my neck. So in those areas. Not bad, but still stiff. I've stretched it. Is it okay to do about a 2-hour cross-country ski today? Moderate trail, fast pace.
Wow, where is he that he has snow, that lucky duck?
Yeah, exactly. I'd probably go. You know, if it were me, I would go. You know, in the absence of sharp shooting pains, neurologic symptoms, you know, pain that's keeping him from getting out of bed, I'd probably go and see if I can get it loosened up. You might be a little stiff, but
I may plan on, instead of doing a 2-hour loop, knowing that if I get an hour into it and I'm really sore, I have to turn around and go back, I may shorten a loop and do it twice.
Yeah.
So I can come back to my car maybe after the first hour. And if I'm still doing okay and feeling good, do another hour.
Yeah.
So kind of have that good little safety net put in place.
I practically levitated out of my
chair
yesterday.
Oh my gosh. My husband scared the daylights out of our dog. Our dog just... something. And to kick it twice.
Wow. One of his leg is sore. Probably not.
Yeah.
Somebody like that, just as an aside, would kickers, if they're right footed, would their right leg be larger than their left?
Oh, their muscle, they have huge asymmetries in their muscle bulk and side to side. We actually sometimes even see it in linemen who always play on one side of the ball because they push off differently. So absolutely. Oh. Yeah, they usually have to buy their pants to fit their bigger muscle. So soccer players are the same way, too. They'll have a difference in their muscle bulk between their plant leg and their kick leg. Yeah, it's
interesting.
Pretty amazing.
Becky and you work with quite a few athletes.
Yes.
So,
the UW athletes.
Becky in Milwaukee up next. Hi, Becky.
Hi.
What can we do for you today?
I was in a bike accident and had a reverse shoulder replacement on my right side.
Yep.
And this was August 10th with the surgery.
Okay.
And up to this point, I've been going to physical therapy, but my deltoid muscle just has not fired or worked. And the range of motion is there. Everything's good that way. But it's been, 5.5 months now? And I was just wondering if you could recommend anything to get that deltoid in operation again.
Yeah. So let's talk about a reverse total shoulder replacement first, because that's a little kind of a newer surgical intervention.
What do they do with that?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So they reverse the, what we call the convex concave rule, or reverse the ball in the socket. So the socket actually becomes round like a ball. And then the top of the humerus actually becomes kind of concave or curved in. So they reverse the mechanics. And so when they do that, you actually do need to be very, what we call deltoid dominant, or do need a really good deltoid to bring your arm up and overhead, because you change the dynamics or the biomechanics of the shoulder.
So does your deltoid not work at all, or it's just not working to your satisfaction?
I can only bring my arm up to about waist level, and I'm dying to be able to do my hair again and put my hair clip in, and I can't get it up there.
So what, 45 degree angle or so?
As you stick your arm out?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't get it further than my waist.
And what does your physical therapist say?
Well, they've tried, you know, the pushing against the wall. Mm-hmm. The latest that they discussed today is perhaps some kind of a stimulator.
Yep, that was going to be the
Have you,
thing.
If you lay down on your back, can you make the angel in the snow motion when you lie down on your back?
Can you get your arm up overhead?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So it's just weakness.
It's just very weak.
Yeah.
So let me ask you another question, Becky. If you bend your elbow in standing, can you bring your arm up higher? So almost like a chicken?
Do the chicken dance?
Well, just again, to probably just above my weight.
Okay.
All right.
So it sounds like really significant weakness against gravity.
Yeah. I wonder if it's weakness or do they X-ray take
nerve.
Down the deltoid?
They take down the deltoid?
It could be a length tension issue.
It could be. Or an irritation of the axillary nerve.
Yeah.
So
it
could have been a little irritated.
Yeah. So I think your physical therapists are on track with trying some electrical stimulation to see if they can get it going. It's hard to know what's causing the weakness. In a perfect world, you should be stronger. Your deltoid should be firing better at 5.5 months. And it doesn't sound like it's for lack of trying. So we were just trying to speculate why that is. And it may be that the muscle length relative to the lever arm is off right now, or it's hard to know, or it can be an axillary nerve. That's why we were asking the question about if it worked at all.
And it sounds like true weakness if she can do it while laying down.
Right,
that's
right.
Good.
And the physical, the other issue, though, could be that her supraspinatus and some of the other stuff it's substituting. Can you, if you lay on your back, can you, with your elbows bent, can you raise your arms forward like you're going to do a chest press?
Yeah, I could do it alone, laying down.
Okay, all right. So I don't know if the deltoids are working. I guess it sounds like your physical therapists are on track with this.
And I do think stim is is a good next step. Sometimes those muscles just really need to be woken up. They have an entirely different role to do. And that is very true with a reverse total shoulder. Now we really want to focus on the deltoid being strong and big and powerful when typically with rotator cuff issues, we want the rotator cuff strong or have good endurance. And so it is definitely a change.
Yeah.
There you go.
So see how that works for you and, you know, give us a call back and let us know how you're doing.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it very much. Mary in Hartford, it's your turn. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. Yes, my question is, with this brutal weather, and I heard it's warmer in Siberia.
Nice.
And now they say, don't, comrade, if you're not good, we're going to send you to Wisconsin. No. But anyway, I just go to the garage, for heaven's sakes, and my hands get like ice. And if I walk out, you know, a little way to the mailbox and back, for heaven's sakes, my hands are like ice. Even with gloves on, and more loving friends have sent me, you know, mittens and this. It's just terrible. Honest, I'm worried that, you know, that they're going to fall off your hands, for heaven's sakes. What do you think about this? What could I do? Stay indoors forever and ever?
There is a medical issue with that.
Right. Raynaud's.
And ironically, Lori and I both wrote the word down at the same time. Like at the beginning of when Mary called. So there's something called Raynaud's phenomenon.
Upside down. I'm telling you, in order for it to work, everything is falling apart.
So, Mary, do you have the same condition in your feet?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you have the same condition in your feet? Do your feet get cold?
A little bit, but not bad. It's mostly the left hand. For heaven's sakes, I can hardly turn the knob.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So Raynaud's phenomenon is a vascular issue where, especially when we get cold, the extremities have a tendency to vasoconstrict and get very, very cold, and it takes quite a long time for them to warm up.
So, you know, mittens are better than gloves, as you probably figured out. You could try, if you have to go out, those little hand warmers. You can stick those little hand warmers in your mittens and see if that helps. But other than that, there's not much that they do for this.
Right.
I actually had a friend who has Raynaud's, and there's a medication that she takes that has completely...
Really?
Oh, really? Okay.
Should see her. You should probably see her physician about it and mention Raynaud's, because she has completely resolved her issue.
And it may be something that you only have to take at certain temperatures.
Right.
You
know? Yeah. Right. At
during
certain
the winter.
Times. Yeah. So you really ought to...
That's a great idea.
Well, thanks, Larry.
Right. Well, just personal experience. Well, not my own experience, but a friend's. So.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Thanks.
Mary, thank you. Darlene in Green Bay, you're up next. Hello. Hi.
I'm calling because I was diagnosed with plantar fasciitis in August, and I've been doing a couple of exercises for it, but not really making any progress.
Yeah, plantar fasciitis is a tough condition to kind of get under control. Do you have night splints that you sleep in at all, Darlene?
No.
Okay.
And I haven't had excruciating pain.
Okay. That's good. Are you worse those first few steps in the morning, or tell us a little bit about your symptoms?
Yes. In the morning. I'm retired, so I can choose not to be on my feet a lot.
Okay.
So I would say my case is mild, but I'm distressed that it doesn't go away.
Yeah, it is a hard one to get rid of. When you're around your house, do you have on good supportive shoes at all time? You're not running around in bedroom slippers or anything? Okay, that's good.
Can you tell me what kind of exercises you're doing?
I'm doing a stretch where I put my right foot is the one affected.
Right, uh-huh.
So I put my left foot near the wall and then my... affected quite a ways behind.
Okay, yep.
And I hold that for a minute.
Right, okay.
And I certainly feel it.
Okay.
And then the other thing I do is use a towel and pull my toes up
as
much as I can.
Yep, okay.
And I also use either a golf ball. Not a golf ball.
Right, sure.
Tennis ball.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect.
A bottle with ice.
Yeah, perfect. Okay.
Yep, those are great things to do. In terms of that stretch, if you also, when you're doing that stretch where you, the first one you described where you put your foot back, if you just have a sock on and you want to put your toes up against the wall or the edge of a step so your toes are pointing straight up, and then kind of bend your knee over it. That's another way to stretch the bottom of your foot. Mm-hmm. But as Jill suggested, kind of the final piece that we recommend is the night splint, because what happens is during the night, your foot usually points downward, and the plantar fascia gets really tight for all those hours at night that you're sleeping. And then in the morning, you get up out of bed and you step down on it and you stretch it abruptly. It tends to respond pretty well to that passive prolonged stretch by wearing that splint at night. So usually wearing that, then, and people say 2 to 3 months is what it takes, and then it'll go away.
And the other thing, Darlene, you were really good about knowing your exercises, so I know you're compliant with them because you could rattle them off right away. How often are you doing them?
Twice a day.
Okay. You could probably do them more. So that's another thing, is if you do them a little bit more frequently throughout the day, you get that stretch a little bit more often, and that may help too, especially if you're sitting in between and those muscles have a tendency to get short and tight. You might need to be stretching a little bit more often. So I would probably up my stretching a little bit more, probably more like 4 or 5 times a day. And then the next line of defense is I'd try the night splint.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum from the University of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us today. We'll go right back to the phones and to Rick in Belleville. Rick, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, Larry. Just for Lori and Jill, a couple things. One, I think I heard somebody say that Sonny Bono had died skiing.
Yep.
And then Michael, did they mention Michael Kennedy?
No.
He was Robert Kennedy's son, and his family they were playing plastic football
on
the slopes of Aspen. And he went off into the trees and had a horrible head injury, and he died.
Such tragedy to that family, I'm telling you.
So a couple questions. My wife is going to have a total knee replacement done in about 2 weeks, and from a physical therapist standpoint, was wondering what you guys recommend pre-op for physical therapy. And then post-op, they've told her perhaps, depending on how well she does, she's not overweight and in good health, but that she might have to go to a rehab facility for several days and then have outpatient physical therapy.
Yep.
That's number one. If you could maybe address that. And then number two, I heard you talk about leg length with regarding several lower extremity problems. Does leg length get factored into a knee replacement when they measure or when they put an implant in, or is that not usually a factor? If you could address that. Maybe I'll take my answers off the air.
Okay. Well, let's start with the second one first. And yes, they do address that. So when they put in the prosthetics, they make sure that they have equal length in their limb. So that's something that's monitored. So so that shouldn't be an issue. It's always in the back minds of physical therapists, though. We always do just kind of
check
it. Correct. But it should be addressed surgically.
Right. So the pre-op question, hopefully she's been instructed in things that she should do. Theoretically, she should come in and be instructed in her post-op exercises before she goes into surgery, because when you come out, you're not feeling so hot and a bit groggy, so it's good if you've practiced those ahead of time. So I would hope that she's been instructed in some of those things. And then those things are all good to do pre-op. Mm-hmm. Leg raises, things like that to keep her quadriceps strong, and things to keep her knee mobile. The key factor is when she goes in for her knee replacement, she wants her knee to be as calm as possible.
Right.
She doesn't want it swollen, red, warm, angry, because that creates an unhealthy environment for healing post-op and can create problems post-op. So the most important thing is that her knee, when she goes in, she thinks, oh, my knee feels pretty good. I wonder why I'm having a knee replacement.
Right, exactly.
You know? So that's how you want it ahead of time. And then afterwards, you know, if she's doing well and getting her motion and is able to do her exercises and move well and things, then she can go home. But if it looks like she's having trouble with her motion, having a lot of pain or knees not moving well, then she's better off going into a facility for a few days, because they will give her very intense therapy. And it's better to pay me now than to pay me later.
Exactly. And it's nice that there will be a social worker or someone who will also help orchestrate all those things. And the biggest thing that I could say is make sure you don't have a gap in your care. So if she's going to a step-down facility or rehab facility for a few days and it looks like she's going to get dismissed on a Friday, start earlier in that week and make sure that you have outpatient therapy scheduled, so there's not this 2-week wait where, I didn't schedule my therapy and now she's at home for 5 or 6 days without therapy. So be on top of it and be very proactive. And the social worker at the hospital will help you with that.
David in Whitefish Bay, thank you for calling. Hello, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks. About 4 or 5 days ago, I was crossing the street and I slipped, actually my right leg going forward, like almost like a perfect forward lunge, and sort of a little too far. Suddenly had sudden pain sort of medial behind the left, behind the right knee, and then in the buttocks. And since then, I feel it like when I'm sitting on the right side, and then I can normally touch my toes. I can only go about 6 inches. And I actually went and was able to do like an elliptical without any trouble yesterday, but what to do about this?
Yeah, it sounds like, I think you thought it was a hamstring issue, and I think you're quite correct, and I was impressed you knew the word medial. It does sound like you probably had a sudden forceful contraction of your hamstring to prevent you from falling farther, and sounds like a classic hamstring strain. And so some easy, gentle stretching where you do try and increase the length of that as if you're touching your toes is a really good idea. Doing some nice, gentle activity like you did the elliptical, which is non-injurious and non-impactive, is a really good idea. Interestingly, hamstring strains are somewhat vulnerable 5 to 7 days after injury, so you just want to be a little careful that in that window of time you don't overdo it.
Okay.
And there's a huge recurrence of hamstring strains as well, so you do want to make sure that if you don't feel with some gentle stretching, you're turning the corner, you see a physical therapist for some very specific exercises.
So let me ask this, Dave. If you lay on your back with your hand behind your right thigh, can you straighten out your knee? Do you feel it in the same place as if you're bending forward? Have you tried to stretch that way, lying on your back?
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Okay. Do you still feel it pulling in your hamstring in the same place?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So trying some stretching that way where you stabilize your back and just work your hamstring is good. You know, with that kind of a forward lunge, certainly you injured your hamstring, but you may have also tweaked things farther up in your pelvis or back. So keeping that part of your body stable without engaging it when you're stretching your hamstring makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. There we go. Thank you. Thanks so much for calling, Dave. Mike in Cambridge, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, and wonderful game, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Hope they don't have too many more injuries.
Oh, yeah.
No, and I'm thinking we'll get Jordy Nelson back.
We'll get Jordy back.
I think that'll
Jordy,
be really good.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping
yeah,
for.
Yeah, he's definitely a hard guy to put down.
Yeah.
Great player. It was more or less a comment. I'm in PT for my lower back. I'm 69 and I have wear and tear arthritis. And for the first time, I did what they call the dry needling.
Uh-huh.
And because my lower back is tight, and whenever I bend over, I protect it, so I didn't, you know, use it. And it's almost like it became dormant.
Sure.
And so what they did was he put two needles. He was going to do my hips too, but we didn't have time. Just, you know, put the two needles in, and it's the size of that. It's like monofilament line. I mean, it's really small. So he introduced the charge into those on the right side until I could feel a little tickle, and that worked well. And then he did the other side, and he was inserting the fourth needle, and he must have hit a trigger spot or something because he said he was hardly entered. Well, he was through the skin a little bit. But so he put it in a different spot, just a hair above that, and tried when he induced the charge into that, he couldn't get a reaction from me. I felt nothing, and he had it turned all the way up. So is that potentially scarring? Is it just a trigger point or something?
So that's a really good question. And a lot of people do receive benefits from physical therapy. You know, you move the needle up or down, side to side, a hair,
sure.
And it may be that you hit a motor end plate, which is highly, highly sensitive on one side, so you don't have to turn the stem up very high at all. And in another area, you don't hit a motor end plate, or as you said, you're more in scar tissue and you don't feel it. So that could very, very likely be the cause. You know, I dry needle as well, and there'll be times I'll see a patient for the second or third time, and I'll use the stem with it, as you talked about. And the first time, maybe I don't have to turn the stem up very high and they can feel that mild sensation. And the second time, I have to turn it up a lot higher. And it could be because those motor end plates have calmed down a little bit. So there is variability with it. And that's totally okay and kind of a normal reaction.
Yeah. But the bottom line of it, my back, it felt better after you had done it. And then the next day, it was like somebody snapped the rubber band. Mm-hmm. And it just was loose. It was just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it was crazy. And my back hasn't, and certainly now I'm in the process of, you know, exercising and trying to build that back up because I protected it so long.
Right, yep.
But I just wanted to comment on that dry knee. I would recommend that just to anybody. It was just super.
And I do want to point out that it was used as an adjunct with Mike, that's what's really important to understand is it has to be used with exercise and stretching and strengthening, and sometimes it's the jump start that you might need, but it certainly doesn't replace all those things.
Right. Well, I do this along with pool therapy along with this, and it is just
Yahoo! Woo-hoo.
Yeah, no kidding. I finally got back to my old high school pool.
Excellent, yeah.
So, but I just wanted to add that comment.
Awesome.
I was really just, you know, it's great results and very low discomfort.
Yeah. Wonderful. Good. Thanks, Mike, for that.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Kate in Ashland, what's on your mind?
Hi. I'm calling because I have a lower back problem that's been diagnosed in the past by physical therapists and doctors as a SI joint.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really pretty active. I run and I Nordic ski and, you know, I'm pretty physically fit.
And it flares up maybe once or twice a year to the point where I'm essentially immobilized. And so I have some exercises to do and stretching, but I'm wondering what you would recommend doing in those moments where it flares up so badly that I essentially can't stand up.
Wow.
That's a really good question. If your SI joint is hypermobile, how old are you?
I'm 37.
Okay. So if you have a little bit of excessive mobility in there, you can actually get what we call a sacral rotation. And then there are very specific exercises you can do to get it calmed down. It would be worth seeing a physical therapist when you're in one of those horrible flares to get that diagnosed so they can show you the specific exercises you could do to fix your sacral, we call it a sacral torsion.
Yeah, exactly. So it's hard to say without seeing you, and Jill's absolutely right. In your in your age group, what we see most often is hypermobility, right. And sometimes you get just to that same point and it goes out. So seeing someone at that time to give you the exact thing to fix it is the right thing to do. Good luck.
And thank you so much for calling in. Jill and Lori, thank you so much.
You bet.
We'll look forward to another visit. February 20th is
absolutely
the next time around.
Uh-huh. Sounds great.
We will be turning now to the Dr. Martin Luther King celebration.